the amount of people that I've talked to who make north of $100,000 or even more who are still struggling financially is absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, hey, the market hustle, helping you to succeed, teaching like nobody else. Okay. Financial empowerment, giving you strategies for generational wealth. Wow. So you can start helping yourself, more money for you to be getting. Right. This the moment for you to be winning and be living financially independent.
Hello, Market Hustle community, and welcome back to another episode. This is episode 17, and today we're going to be breaking down a very important topic, a very important subject, and that is common misconceptions around money. Now, everybody you know, including yourself, like we all grow up in different environments, in different family structures, just around different people who influence our outlook on the world as we're growing up as young kids. And one of those most important things that you tend to get influenced by is going to be just money beliefs in general, right? Like as a kid, you know, as you're starting to develop and starting to think about things and just be curious about the world, one common subject or just one common thought tends to be around the concept of money and how people in your family or people who are close to you, or even just figures like teachers and institutions who you're just around more often, they're going to be influencing your thoughts around this concept because everybody has a hardcore opinion about what money is or how it kind of works in the world or just some sort of belief. So today we're going to dive in. I got Boffy here. I have Pierce, the co-host, are back, and we're going to dive into this subject, just going over some common misconceptions that we all notice in our lives around our friends, around our family, around just people in the public, right? Just these common misconceptions. Some people tend to think money is evil. Some people tend to think money is bad. So we hope to just give some more insight into just the common misconceptions that may be holding you back from potentially getting more money, or even just trying to challenge different belief systems that you may not even be aware you have, right? So that's the whole goal of this podcast. It's great to have all the listeners back. That being said, let's introduce our co-host once again, Boffy. We'll start with you. How are you doing today, my friend?
Yeah, it's good to be back. We are live in action, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of important topics here, including some of these misconceptions. I'm doing great. I'm feeling great. I feel healthy. I've been eating well. I've been working out. I'm 7 days straight strong on my yoga, which hopefully I can continue. And I'm super excited just for the seasons to change, for the weather to get warmer, to be able to get outside. A lot of fun activities coming up this week. Been a busy work week, but aside from that, looking forward to this weekend. Family time. I have both of my parents, both of my in-laws are coming as well. And so we're going to have a nice weekend, good family time, and just have fun. Yeah, doing great.
Great to hear, man. Yeah, it's nice that we're starting to enter spring. You know, Seattle's been a little less rainy. Today we have a nice sunny day, so I completely feel you on that. I'm excited for summer specifically. Got the weather kind of warming up. That's always good news. But great to hear everything's going well on your side of the world, Boffy. Pierce, how are you doing, my friend? How's things going on your side?
I can't complain, man. It's been a good week. Just sent my cousin off into my Nana's house in San Diego. She's visiting from France, so we've been showing her the area a little bit. Just been working and just dealing with some friends and stuff like that. Other than that, I've been dealing with a bunch of pollen from the trees around me because, as we're talking about, the seasons are changing. So those who have a nice car and they want to keep their car clean, I suggest don't buying a dark car if there's a lot of yellow pollen, because the second after you wash it, you're screwed. But other than that, I'm good, man.
There we go. Just a couple minutes in and we already got one of the tips of the podcast right there. Avoid the dark color cars.
Avoid.
Good stuff, man. Great to have you both back. So yeah, let's just jump right in. So I guess the first question we'll just really start to tackle, we'll go after the core question of the podcast. Like, what is a common toxic money belief that you hear often just kind of going throughout your day, maybe in the public settings? Like maybe you just hear like a random conversation or just somebody talk about money in general that just may be something that is a strong belief they're holding on to. What's a common toxic belief around money that you tend to notice? And Pierce or Boffy, either of you can go first.
For me, it's the more money I'll make, the more money I'll have, which I believe is not true. I mean, let's say you make $50,000 a year and you spend $30,000 a year. And let's say you make $500,000 a year. You're most likely going to spend $300,000 a year, because it's not the money that you make that you that you're used to dealing with. It's how much that like you just don't know how to deal with it. And so for most people, it's understanding how to deal with the money that you have already, not the money that you might potentially get later on. And so that's something that I'm seeing as I'm growing with my wealth and everything like that. It's okay, I make this much here. It's something like Josh says all the time for the people who don't know, it's increase your income, but decrease your expenditures. And so it's one of those things that I've been trying to focus on more as I grow my income and I grow my wealth, is to basically minimize how much I want to spend versus how much I get in. And I think that's one of the big things that people have a misconception on, is the more money I'll get, the more money I'll save, which is not always true. So you have to build these habits to put them in place to get you to the point to where once you have more money, you can save more money.
Completely agree on that end. I mean, the amount of people that I've talked to who make north of $100,000 or even more, who are still struggling financially, is absolutely mind-blowing. Like, a lot of people, when you hear somebody making like $100,000 a year as a doctor or a lawyer, or even like $200,000 a year if they're like an executive, like a lot of them, although they make a lot of money, a lot of them still struggle with the money management part, right? And that's something a lot of people don't really comprehend, because they think if they make a lot of money, all of their money problems will just kind of vanish and disappear. But what people forget, what a lot of people forget from what I've been aware of, is they don't realize that making money and managing money are two completely different skill sets, and they require two different ways, like two different education styles. Like, you have to educate yourself first on how to make money, which is what we have a lot of these institutions. That's what's their job to basically do, is to like educate people to increase their skills so that they can demand more for their labor, for their time. But what is not really out there is the managing money part, right? There's not a lot of education on the money management side of things, and that's just a completely different skill. And I think a lot of people have a hard time kind of separating those, because a lot of people think if they just earn more money, it'll solve all of their problems. And don't get me wrong, like, it definitely helps to make more money. I'm not telling anybody, don't go out there and make more money. Like, of course, that's going to help you. It's going to give you more resources in order to, you know, build the life you want to build. But at the same time, if you have a spending problem, like if you're spending every single dollar you get as soon as it enters your bank account, which happens to a lot of people, like especially if you're a new high income earner, like if you come from a family that just kind of struggled with money, and then you kind of decided to educate yourself, like go to college or do whatever, and like put in the work in order to get a high income, odds are it's going to be a struggle for you to grow into that high income, right? Like, it's not going to be easy for you if you grew up in a household that just wasn't great with money to manage that money great, right? You have to get over the spending problem, you have to manage your spending appropriately before you actually can get that money, like just make your financial situation a lot more healthier, right? So yeah, I completely agree with you on that side of thing, Pierce. Like, making money and managing money are just two different complete concepts. And I think the sooner like people have that realization, the sooner they'll be able to kind of pinpoint where they need to focus their energy on. Because a lot of people, like, they'll just only focus on just got to make more money. And then as soon as they make more money, they fall into that lifestyle inflation trap where like, they're like, okay, cool, I made some more money, so now I can spend more money. And then 6 months later goes by and they're like, damn, now I need more money because now I'm living paycheck to paycheck again. So they just end up in this perpetual cycle of having to go and make more money. They level up, and then they end up in the same scenario where they're still paycheck to paycheck because they just keep spending every dollar that they get. But if they understood that making money and managing money were two different skills, they could focus more of their energy on the management part, the money management part, and then not have to stress themselves out more so of like trying to continually increase their income forever, which of course, like, I don't want people to miss, you know, understand this, like increasing your income is a great thing to do. But at the same time, you want to make sure you're also being smart. You want to work smarter, not harder necessarily, right? You want to make sure your money's working for you, not only you working for money. So great point, Pierce. Bafi, how about yourself? Like, what would you say is one of the common toxic money beliefs you hear often?
Yeah, man. Before I even touch on one of them, I think to Pierce's point is quite spot on, right? Like, the automatic response is to think making money equals having money, because we are really conditioned to operate that way. And for some reason, many of us don't give it a thought or a conscious effort to actually question some of these beliefs that's been instilled in us basically since birth, right? It's like, hey, you get good grades, then you get a reward, or you get, you know, you do this, you get that. And when you growing up, and it's like many of us growing up, we didn't have much resources, much access. You know, when you can't do what you want, get the basketball that you want to get the video game that you want to grab, go to the concert of your favorite artist or something like that, because your family don't have the resources and you don't have it. You get to a position where you tell yourself this in your brain, literally, that, man, one day when I finally start making some money, or I'm able to work and make my own money, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to do this, that, and the third, right? And so, you know, you get to the point where it's like, okay, you want to do everything that looks like fun, right? So you want to just travel. You want to just party, buy clothes, buy luxuries, this flexing culture that we have, jewelry, trying to impress everybody else. And having dreams to enjoy and experience the finer things in life is actually very, very healthy. And we encourage that, right? But there's a healthy way of going about obtaining these things and engaging in these activities. So we all have to be very, very cautious in what we tell ourselves and the beliefs we have. Making money is good. Definitely do your best to increase your earning power, but don't attach your identity and your self-value and make that be the end goal in terms of, hey, I'm making money, therefore I have money. Because making money and having money, like Josh said, are two completely different languages. Okay. So in the spirit of money-related topics and some of the challenges that many of us see in terms of misconceptions regarding finances, I think one of the biggest one is really budgeting is restrictive and confusing. Mm. Okay. And the reason why I say that is because, again, we have been conditioned to think a budget is basically a problem, like a bug in the house, like the cockroach in the house that's running around that you just want to kill it, get rid of it, right? But a budget is really should be your best friend. You know, we and it's not, in most cases, we're actually not terrible at budgeting. We know how to budget. You know, we budget for a living. Literally every single day, we're budgeting our time. We're budgeting our energy. We're budgeting how much time we spend on social media or how much attention we want to give somebody, right? And so this is the same concept that you already do in your sleep. But when it comes to money, we're so emotionally connected and psychologically tricked to thinking is one way instead of the other, that we assume that budgeting means basically going on a diet, never living life and enjoying anything. And many of us think it's confusing, but it seems confusing if you don't have a plan or a strategy in place, a clear-cut, organized way of being able to look at your numbers and analyze it. And so that is one of the biggest things I've seen people struggle with, thinking that is budget. And it's, in some cases, yes, it is the financial pieces and one's financial responsibility, right? We can't be insensitive about that. People have serious challenges they have to navigate. And then on the other hand, it's really a psychological thing more so than just the numbers, depending on one situation. So, you know, if you say something is bad or you say budgeting is restrictive, budgeting is confusing, you're absolutely right. You would never have a healthy budget in your life. You will always live paycheck to paycheck. You will work and trade all your time for money and never have any. And so you want to make sure that you are budgeting, because without budgeting, forget it. You actually have no chance in building financial wealth, gaining your time back, and being able to enjoy the things you want. Think about all the biggest companies on the planet, whether it's NVIDIA, whether it's Apple, whether it's Meta, whether it's Google. It doesn't matter. They're all budget. Why do you think they budget? Why do you think they hire so many people for financial planning and analysis with all of these models? They're constantly budgeting literally every single day on everything they're spending money on, right? They're not special than you are. They're not smarter than you are. They just happen to have a bit more resources and a bit more experience in a specific area of work and operation. And the good news for you is you don't have to worry about the entire company's financials. You just got to worry about yours. That's it. Okay. So budgeting is restrictive and confusing is one of the biggest misconceptions.
That's a great ad. And Bafi, I'm curious, just like from your perspective, what do you think causes people to just have this immediate negative connotation to budgeting? Like, what do you think it is? Do you think it's because maybe people try budgeting at one point of their life, but they just don't really know what they're doing. So they just end up like not being able to figure it out. Like, or do you think it's more of just like, it seems intimidating to go through your finances? Like a lot of people aren't really actively paying attention to where their money's going, how much money they got coming in. So do you think just opening up that reality of your life, that portion of your life, just would kind of feel a little painful to people because it would require them to take a deeper look at the numbers of where their money's going and basically get honest with themselves? Do you think it's more of that? Or do you think it's just more of just like society where like everybody has this, there's like this stigma that if you're budgeting that you're broke, you know, for some reason, when in reality, if you're just going out and partying every weekend and just spending all your money on, you know, fancy restaurants or just trying to like enjoy this lifestyle because, you know, YOLO, you only live once, so fuck it. You know, I'm just going to spend the money I got and enjoy life the most I can. But in reality, what happens is you're going to start to pay for those decisions throughout your life. Like you're just making life much more difficult for yourself rather than just getting stuff situated now and, you know, getting it, basically being more strategic with your finances in order to not have to make life as hard for you when it comes to the finance side of the world. I'm just curious to get your thoughts of like where, and maybe it's a mixture of all of these, but like, why do you see people struggle with the concept of budgeting so much?
Yeah, no, great question, man. So it is a mixture of all of them. And I think the first one is really just a knee-jerk reaction, right? It's like, it's funny because I had one friend who he was very interested because everything is a no until evidence is proven, like until you provide evidence, right? So it's like, hey, what do you think of no? Right? And he got to the point where no was just like, first name basis, right? At that point. So it's like, it's really a knee-jerk reaction by majority of people in society is we hear budget and we automatically think, you know, the worst case scenario or it don't belong in our lives and my life, I shouldn't have to budget my life, right?
Yeah.
So that's one. And then the second is really fear of knowing the truth. People are afraid of the truth like nothing else, right? I mean, so much so that we lie to ourselves every day. You know, many people go online and lie to themselves, literally. Like, they will lie to others while lying to themselves about themselves, right? And it's like, knowing the truth is painful, is difficult, because you have to face reality. And once you know the truth, you can't then pretend the truth don't exist. You know what I mean? It's like, that ignorance is bliss type of thing, out of sight, out of mind. So there's a bit of that involved. And for some people, there's really not knowing how. They might have tried it. They might have done some research, whether it's on social media or on a podcast or, you know, looked at something on YouTube and they might have tried something and realized, oh, it doesn't work. And then there's a million different types of ways of budgeting, right? And so sometimes when there's too much information, it can be overwhelming. And then society definitely plays a role in this entire ball game as well, right? Because as a society, we don't even talk about budgeting as a society. Only time we hear budgeting is either from our companies that don't want to pay us more, right? Because they got to keep budgets tight and manage their resources well.
What?
Or we hear something from the government in terms of, hey, the budget deficit or budget this. We need money for this or, you know.
go ahead. I honestly feel like the way people kind of perceive budgeting is like a doctor diagnosis of like, hey,
oh, yeah,
your finances are messed up. You got to budget. Uh-huh. So like they see it from that perspective, like where yep. people only yep. think of budgeting when they have no other option, right? When the credit cards yeah. are maxed out.
When shit hit the fan.
When shit hits the fan. When in reality, like if you're proactive about it, like there is a real reality where you could budget while things are going good. And it mm-hmm. actually helps your life get even better, right? Like where you're budgeting for fun, where you're budgeting for a better life. I don't think people understand that perspective of budgeting because a lot of people only get scoped in on that, you know, that diagnosis. Like, hey, you have no choice. Like you have to budget because you have no other option. So I think that it's kind of like the boogeyman. But in reality, like the way I budget for fun, right? Like I want to budget so I can figure out how many vacations I can go on next year, right? So I can figure out how much, you know, if I want to go to Europe, I want to make sure I can see how much I could spend, right? Like I want to see what flights I could take. Like there is that reality of budgeting. It's not mm-hmm. only the constricting or the restricting part. It could also be just budgeting to actually enjoy life how you want to enjoy it.
Great point, man. And I think back to in terms of society, how things operate. Society have actually done a very terrible job when it comes to budgeting in general. Like we're actually terrible. And some of the financial stress that nations go through is partly because of the individuals within the nation and the, you know, the citizens not doing their part, right? And being responsible and accountable. And that trickles all the way down to some of these big problems and some of the challenges we face. So I think society has done a good job of not making budgeting sexy, right? Like, entertainers don't talk about it. You know, artists don't talk about it. People that we see in the media that are in the front and center all the time, they don't talk about it, right? The athletes don't talk about it. I mean, hell, most of the athletes are broke. You know, You probably, anybody listening to this, you probably have more money in your bank account than some of these NBA players and football players. And you'll be shocked. You looking at them on TV thinking you're broke and they're winning in life when it comes to money. And you have no idea what's really going on. Right. And so society have done a terrible job of actually being real and transparent. So we need to get to the point where we're making budgeting sexy. That's why we're talking about it on this podcast. That's why we share life stories. That's why we bring on people that have similar journeys, different journeys, similar income levels, different backgrounds, different experiences. And you can see why that is so important. The goal is to make budgeting as sexy as we like watching some of these, you know, activities that are entertaining. So, you know, budgeting doesn't have to be boring, doesn't have to be mundane. It doesn't have to feel like, here we go again. I got a budget. Me, so I'm missing out on life. No, you, like Josh said, you budget for fun. He budgeting for trips. I'm budgeting for trips. You should be budgeting for trips. We budget for going out to eat and get quality, you know, family experiences and just adventures in. You should be doing the same thing. If you like food, budget for food, because I like food. You know, you like clothes, certain hobbies, right? And some of these hobbies are actually very, you'll be surprised. You might like sports, but you might not want to play competitively, like at a high level, right? Because it requires a commitment. But you might want to play a nice little league, right? Like a little senior league or something like that. Or, you know, just join one of these clubs that goes around. Budget for that. Mm-hmm. You know, budgeting doesn't have to be like, oh my gosh, I'm putting money aside only to do nothing, or I'm only paying my debt. No, don't forget to understand that you owe yourself. You owe yourself a huge debt, which is my life not important enough for me to exercise? Is my life not important enough for me to eat the right things that's going to help me really be productive, effective, and show up daily and for the long term? Am I not worthy of enjoying some of the best things and finest things on the planet? Not just one time, because if you just swipe the credit card and just go and then come back and then now you can't go again for another 5 years, that's a problem. But am I not worthy of putting the right things in place so I can enjoy the things that I really love to enjoy for the rest of my life? That is one of the things and how I make some of the most important decisions in my life. Even if I'm tired, even if I'm feeling lazy, even if I want to procrastinate, even if I know I probably shouldn't do it, I ask myself, okay, is my life not worthy of taking a little bit of time, a little bit of resources to make sure I'm putting it in the right direction? Like, are you not worthy of that? And you better start telling yourself you're worthy of every damn good thing that the world has to offer. And you go ahead and go after it. And you do it in a sexy fashion. Don't let nobody tell you that it has to be boring. Okay. There's nothing sexier than being able to do the things you enjoy without going broke. Right. Being able to help the people you care about, being able to help the community that you care about. And it's not always just about money. You know, tomorrow morning, I'm going to volunteer at a food bank. In my past world, I would be at work. You know, and so there are so many things to do, and budgeting basically opens doors for you. That's the biggest takeaway I'm going to end this spiel on right now, is the fact that budgeting is designed to open the doors that you want to open. If you don't budget, you're not going to have the key to get through those doors.
Exactly, man. I mean, and I think it's ultimately important to realize that what everybody wants is the freedom to do what they want, right? That's why credit cards and debt is appealing, because it kind of gives you that temporary option to kind of go on that trip, even though you maybe can't afford it, or, you know, take a week off work because you could just swipe the credit cards. You know, like it kind of gives you that's illusion of freedom. And the lack of budgeting tends, like, the reason why I think some people don't want to budget is because they don't want to worry about money. They just want to live their life. But in reality, by not caring about the money part or getting your situation like actually in order, you'll always have to be worried about money, because you're not going to be able to get to a point in your life where it's not an issue, right? Like if you're constantly living paycheck to paycheck or using debts in order to pay bills, it's going to be very difficult for you. You're going to constantly have to confront those decisions in the future. And it's going to be like a constant cycle where like maybe a year or two, you can sustain your extra lifestyle that you're using on debts, but then eventually you're gonna have to face it. You'll have to face it and figure it out. And then maybe after a couple of years, you're kind of back into like a more stable situation and you kind of repeat that pattern where you're like, all right, well, now that I can apply for credit cards again, I'll start getting those credit cards and you kind of fall back into the cycle of, you know, what you're ultimately trying to get at is living a life where you just don't care about money. But if you don't take like a few years to get your life situated, to get your finances in order, ironically, you're going to have to care about money for your entire life compared to if you invest the 2, 3, 4 years to, you know, get your money habits in order to start building the savings, 3 to 6 months of the savings in your accounts. That way, if something happens to your income, you can still sustain your bills for three to six months without any income coming in. Like that alone is such a comfort or just a blanket of security that a lot of people never get to. But just getting to those points will allow you to move through life a lot more freely, right? You'll have more options that open up to you once you have some savings funded, once you have no consumer debts, once you get some investments going, like once you actually start investing in the stock market, let's say you get like 50K, 100K, like you just have more options that open up to you. Like you'll be able to quit a toxic job. Like if you hate your job, it's a lot easier to leave that job when you got 3 to 6 months of expenses saved up in your savings account, no debt, and you have like 50K in the 401K or wherever investment account you're investing. It's a lot easier just to be like, all right, I'm out of here. I can figure it out because I have options that are supporting me, compared to if you have piles of debt because you've used credit cards or personal loans to kind of sustain a lifestyle that's not sustainable. Or, you know, you're essentially just borrowing from your future self. It's harder to move through life and to find different options, right? It's harder to leave a job that's toxic if you're so dependent on that income. If you're living paycheck to paycheck, it's not easy to leave. So ultimately, like just to kind of cap what Bafi said, I think ultimately what budgeting really is just getting real with yourself and allocating your money to areas that you truly value, right? So like I like to think of money management or just budgeting of just completely understanding what you value most out of life, like what areas that you like to spend money on, and making sure that you situate your financial situation to abide by those values, right? And to build a lifestyle that you actually truly enjoy and that's sustainable over a long period of time. And Bafi also touched on an important point about just like the celebrities. You know, I think as a society, like we look up to like these celebrities, which are great. Like, you know, I'm not like, there's nothing bad about it. But at the same time, like if you see people live in this like crazy lifestyle where they're just like on these vacations every other week and they have these like crazy big mansions, like you do have to realize that a lot of those, like especially like NBA players or like NFL like sports, like they're actually really bad with money. Like there's a lot of stats out there. And the one that I recently saw was, it was estimated that like 60% of retired NBA players and 78% of retired NFL players file for bankruptcy after just a couple of years. So to kind of Pierce's original points that kind of kicked off this podcast, you know, just summarizing it, making money and managing money are two completely different skills, right? Like we see these with these professionals, like these celebrities who, you know, they make a lot of money and a lot of them, they just kind of blow it. And, you know, whatever, if you're happy, cool. But at the same time, like when that income stops and like maybe they're in their 40s or 50s, especially as like a sports, like playing football or, you know, wherever, like you can only sustain that lifestyle or that income for so long until your body starts to give out on you. And then if you didn't actually make a plan to, you know, the after plan of like what you do after that, like you're eventually going to reach a point where if you can't generate income and your money habits are out of control, well, then you're kind of screwed, right? Like, unfortunately, you're going to have to face that moment. And the hope of this podcast is like, if anybody's, you know, if you're in the early stages of trying to get your money together, like I just hope that you take away from this podcast that this game is deeper than just the money part. It's not just about trying to make yourself richer or just get more money, right? That's not what it's deeply about. What it's really about is living life how you want to live it. And we live in a society where it, you know, the money is very important, whether you want to admit it or not. But the sooner you take the time to invest in your money management skills and just invest in understanding how you can better manage it in your own life, it's only going to make your life so much easier. Like, of course, it might be hard initially when you're just getting started and trying to overcome just maybe your old beliefs or people around you who are like saying stuff, like maybe it's even your own family. Like, one of the hardest parts of improving your financial situation is having your own family try to influence you to make bad financial decisions. And of course, they may not be doing it, like they're not consciously trying to sabotage you from improving your life. Like, it's just a lot of people don't understand like why this money game matters, right? They see it as, a lot of people will start to see it as like, you know, when you're going down this path of trying to improve your money, like they think of you as greedy. They're like, why do you care about money so much? And it's like, well, it's not about the money. It's about having more control and freedom over my life, right? Like, that's a lot of people, it's hard for them to kind of comprehend that, especially if they have zero financial education. So a great point from both of you.
No, spot on. I think one misconception that's becoming more heavier in today's mainstream, that many of us might not really give it much thought, is really the thinking that money will solve relationship problems. Right. That is something that many of us have assumed that, okay, if we just make more money, oh, our problems are going to be solved. Right. Because now there's a pretty big challenge when it comes to, say, you know, relationship dynamics and the expectations of both parties, whether on the men's side or the women's side, or, you know, however you kind of go about in terms of your relationship. And so everyone is assuming that, okay, if the partner just makes more money, our problems are solved. No, there are certain situations and problems in relationships that no amount of money in the world can solve. I mean, you have billionaires, CEO of tech giants, and marriages are ending in divorce. Families are being split. A lot of things are happening. And part of that is because we've lost our way of just being humans. And no amount of money is going to fix some of these problems. So yes, making money is great. And I'll just kind of add another spin on it real quick is, just because you make money don't mean that you're more valuable than somebody else. Okay? Just because you make money or your partner can't meet you at a certain threshold financially, it does not mean that that person is not a competent, valuable person that can add a huge lift and addition to your life. There are a lot of things worth more important than money, because most people don't have money, but they have fucking incredible families, mm-hmm. fucking amazing relationships, and they will die for each other and they will struggle with each other. And there's something to be said about that, right? And the money is really just the icing on the cake. Of course, candid conversations need to be had, certain baselines in terms of provision and security, right? To be able to live, to be able to thrive, that's important. But these days, too many people are making money, and they're making money their identity, their value, and diminish the entire value of another human being simply because they can't garner as much financial resources. And we have to do a better job at that, because we lose kindness, we lose empathy and sympathy. Mm-hmm.
We've got it confused, man. I feel like society has it all flipped in a sense. And of course, like there's seeds of truth in like everything. And like a lot of the societal wisdom around money that you hear constantly, I don't know if you want to call it wisdom, but there's like seeds of truth, right? Like where you, maybe you have this like anti-billionaire status or whatever. And like, of course, there's going to be people who they have been engulfed by the chase of money. And that's not something we recommend. Like the whole entire point of getting money the way that we see it is so that you can enjoy life on your own terms, right? So like there's a difference between chasing money for money's sake and chasing money for freedom to enjoy the life however the hell you want, right? Those are very often confused, both of those routes, but there's a very big difference between both of those perspectives, both of those mindsets, and how you go about through life in general, right? So that was a great addition, Bafi, and I hope we become more understanding of that perspective, because of course it's important to get your money game situated, and we're all for, you know, increasing your income, having a growth perspective, and growing, like becoming the best version of yourself. But at the same time, if doing that is causing you to put down other people, or just, you know, start to only care about the number itself, the money part, which this a lot of people fall in this category. If that's what it's causing you to do, at some point you have to take a step back and be like, am I genuinely happy with this sort of lifestyle? Like, is this what I want out of my life? Like, is money serving me, or am I serving money? Because if you're chasing money just for the money, money still has you under control. Just as somebody who's using debt, who has the credit card and money has them, like it's using them, right? They're under control by the debts. You know, they have the chains of debts. Somebody who is not in debts and has millions of dollars, but they're constantly chasing the money because they don't know when it's enough for themselves, they're also being controlled by money.
Yeah, they're getting cooked.
Yes, they are.
Cooked because, yes, they are. Dude, and right now, there's something that we tend to forget as well is that we live in a different society, right? Things are much different these days than it was even 10 years ago. And so just because you're making money, it doesn't mean you have it all figured out. That money can be gone the next day. You can lose your job. Anything can happen, right? And so we're in a society where, you know, teamwork is even more imperative now more than ever. Right. And so one of the things that we probably tend to see around now is 50-50 on a first date, or like, you know, there's a lot of these interesting, funny debates and stuff going on. And I just kind of look at it like, OK, well, I get it. Everybody has their preference and that's great. By the end of the day, do you really want to go through life struggling 100% by yourself? Like, is that the situation you want to be in? Right. And one thing I've realized is, when you make money or you earn some good money and you build some wealth, the worst thing to do is to actually be lonely while you have money and have that resource. Because naturally, the natural tendency is as your life gets better and you get more financial returns, you actually want to share that. Like, it's a human instinct to actually share that enjoyment, that experience with somebody else, right? And so it's like, I don't want to have all the money in the world and then I'm coming home by myself all day, every day, 24/7, lonely as hell. No amount of money can fix that. Yeah, you might be able to get your fix here and there. But in terms of real substance, right, and like really enjoying the full life experience, no amount of money is going to give you that.
That's very true. Another one that I think that we should touch on is that all debt is bad debt. And I mean, Josh just mentioned the word debt, so it triggered my mind. But I mean, I think that's one of those things that's like consumer debt, like if you have high credit card debt, you know, high auto loan debt and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty bad. But if you're taking like a large step of buying your own house, right, you're going to be taking a $300,000, $400,000 loan over the course of 30 years. Yeah, it's debt. It's a large amount of debt. But I mean, some debts outweigh others. And so I look at it as like assets versus liabilities. Like credit card debt, I mean, you're buying food, you're buying clothes, you know, you're buying your kid a new phone, whatever, whatever, whatever. But a house is an asset, something that could over time, you know, statistically, they go up in value. Like when my dad bought my house back 12 years ago, he paid cash. And the house is worth triple of what it was 12 years ago. So just in that amount of time, you could see how much the asset has produced for us over time, even though it's not like we get monetary gain monthly. But when my dad plans to sell the house, we get monetary gain. And so that's one of the things that I think that is a huge misconception, is that all debt is bad. Like you hear people saying, especially if you're into real estate and whatnot, you hear people saying, oh, I'm $50 million in debt. And people are like, dude, that's so bad. But it's like, no, dude, they have $400 million worth of properties. Like that is one of those things that's a huge misconception, that debt is equals bad, to which in most cases it does for most people, like consumer debt and stuff like that. But, you know, if you're looking to further your education and you think that, you know, that could value over time. Absolutely, man. Like, you know, student loans, I'm not deterring anybody from student loans. Most people have to do it and it's a sucky thing. But if you want to further your education to be able to make more money down the line, I think that debt in a sense could be a good thing if you can manage it.
That's a good point, Pierce. And ultimately, I think it kind of stems from just not understanding what money fundamentally is. Like the way I perceive money is simply a tool, right? Like it really has no... Like money itself is just a tool that society uses for us to trade resources, to trade our time, to trade our skills, and for society to trade resources, right? That being said, like if we have that definition of money, like of course, owing somebody money is not the ideal situation. But if we break down the concept that Pierce just talked about, where there are instances where you could potentially use some money from the bank, like let's say you don't have $100,000 to buy a home, or maybe to start a business that you've already done the math on and it's going to like do well and you're pretty confident about that. Like it could make sense to help, you know, to use resources from other places such as a bank in order to buy an asset or just to kind of level up your financial gain, right? Like that's a productive use of debts. But of course, now if you're using credit cards and you're just like, you know, you get the debts of the consumer debt portion where you're just like, you know, I haven't really been able to buy a new pair of shoes for a couple of weeks. And I just kind of want to get some, you know, there's these new pair of shoes that everybody wants. Everybody's going to buy them and I kind of want to get them. And it'll take me a couple weeks to do it or whatever. And you start to just swipe in that credit card, right? When you start using debts as a way to kind of inflate your lifestyle just for pure looks or just to make yourself feel good for a few moments, that's where you start to enter dangerous territory, because that's not really a productive use of debt if you're going to start to go into that world. But when you're using it to buy real estate, to purchase a business, to further your education, it definitely can potentially be useful. Now, I want to clarify, that doesn't mean it's automatically going to be great, because like there's going to be risk in whatever you do. So like there could be a chance where you buy a home and the home sucks, you know, maybe it's just not great and the foundation sucks and you just find out that it's a money pit. Or you start a business, right? Like let's say you start a business, you take out a loan of $50,000 to open up a restaurant that you want to start, and you think it's going to go great. Once you get that loan, let's say you open it up, there's a possibility that it's going to not do well. And then you're kind of screwed because you still owe the bank money. You still owe them the debts. So like, of course, those are the worst case scenarios. But at the same time, I think the point is if you can avoid using debt, that's always an ideal situation, right? Like if you can start your business without owing the bank any money, there's a lot less risk you're taking on. So you can kind of like flow through life a little bit easier when it comes to like trying out different things. But of course, I it's still a great and valid point, Pierce, where debt can be used as a tool if you're using it in the right areas.
Yeah, no, really good point, man. And that's what it is. It's simply a tool, right? All these topics that we cover are ultimately tools. Now, how that tool is used depends on the individual, the circumstances, where they're trying to go with it. You know, so that's very, very important to understand. And unfortunately, again, it's one of those things where society have kind of made it a little bit muggy and like convoluted, right? Because the reality is most people are not using debt the way it's probably intended to be used. Mm-hmm. And then there's the community that's like, okay, hey, look, you can actually use debt for the way it's intended to use to actually really make significant progress in areas and experiences and growth where you otherwise wouldn't have the financial means to make those things happen, or it would take you 20, 30 years to finally get enough to get a foot in the door, you know? So it's a really healthy balance there that everybody has to decipher for themselves. But by deciphering that for yourself, whatever you do or however you utilize in debt, just make sure you're not doing it and following the people that are doing it wrong. Okay.
That's a key point.
That's the key point. Get around the people that do it and use these tools effectively. Sometimes it's just your friends, your close friends. Mm-hmm. Right? Some of them might be doing it well, or maybe none of them are using it well. That's when you have to be honest with yourself and be honest with your friends. Because if you're a true friend, you want to see your other close brothers and sisters win. Okay. And this goes for the ladies too. This is very important. You know, it's hard for a lot of people to be honest and transparent without it people feeling some type of way or thinking there's some message behind it or somebody's being petty or, you know, mean. But the reality is, sooner or later, 5-10 years will arrive, and where you're going to be sitting at is dependent on what you're doing today. And so for the ladies out there, I know it can be complicated when you have certain conversations with your girlfriends, but keep it real with them, because at the end of the day, you're doing it out of love. And if you're doing it for the right reasons, eventually they might not like to hear it right away, but over time, they will actually appreciate the fact that you, even if you're not friends down the road, they will still respect and appreciate the fact that you cared about them enough to actually be honest with them and help them see certain things that they otherwise would have missed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point, Bafi, because that's something I've noticed as well, as like in some friend groups, they might kind of encourage you to make financial decisions that you would understand as bad. Maybe they don't see it that way because maybe they make more money, or they just are financially irresponsible, so they don't understand the consequences of financial decisions. And then, of course, like if you just come off a certain way where you're just like, no, I don't want to do that, to them, they might see it as a negative thing, and they start to think like, oh, you're better
than
vibe.
Me. It's like you're killing the vibe, bro. Like
exactly. So what would you
that, it's that group think about it too, right? Because it's like, if let's say five of us and three or four decides like, yeah, let's do this. Now you're like, ah, shit, I have to just kind of do it.
Yeah. And I guess like in certain instances, like, of course, like we're like, again, the whole point of getting our money situation in order is so we can live life how we want to live it. So once you have that, once you get to a point where your finances are in order, once you have the savings, once you started investing, like you have more flexibility to kind of be more spontaneous with your money, right? Once you, there's that reality where you can get to the point where the budget's going to get you to a part of your life where you can be spontaneous without going into debt or without making things more difficult for yourself. At the same time, you do still have to go through those initial stages. Like you can't skip the foundations. Like we all want to skip the savings. We all want to skip having to improve our money habits. We all want to skip having to get real with ourselves when it comes to finances. But what are some of the ways, Boffy or Pierce, that maybe you have utilized to maybe you've been in certain friend groups in the past where they've encouraged money situations or money habits that maybe you wanted to avoid? Like what strategies have you kind of implemented to kind of get around those? And maybe that's, you know, maybe that includes trying to like let them down softly or just leaving the friend group altogether. I'm just curious to get like some of the strategies you've kind of utilized in your life.
I love this question, man. I'll take a stab at it first, Pierce, and then you can pick up right after. So throughout my journey, right, almost everything I've done financially is actually like abnormal. So I've experienced firsthand what it's like to be in a community or to be around friends and people that have known you a certain way. And then now they have to also adjust to the new way that you think, right? And how you're making different decisions than before. Before you would all just make the same decisions together. Now you're kind of thinking on a different path. And so, you know, I've seen certain environments and I've been around people where it's like, okay, well, this is what you're going to do with your money. That's fine. That's your life. I'm not doing that with my money. And when I see certain people over the years make poor financial decisions, this may sound terrible, but based on that experience that they're having and what they experienced and how it's impacting them, lets me know I shouldn't be making those decisions, right? Because if those decisions led to worse situations and outcomes than what they were in before, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going that way. You know, and I'm very candid about that. I'm very transparent. I'm honest. And I think that's one of the best ways to live life is to be real to who you really are and the things that you're trying to go after. And then in some parts, kind of let the chips fall where they may. Right. So I've been around, I've had close friends or, you know, like acquaintances or colleagues, and they live their life a certain way. And I respect it. It's your life to live. And that's all good and gravy. What they love it. It works for them. I love it. It works. Right. But for me, I saw some like a different direction for myself. And so it never really gets combative. And it's because if somebody's close to me, they know my intentions behind it too. That's another thing. I think that's sometimes people have a hard time communicating their true intentions behind why I don't want to go on the flight, why I don't want to get this club, the section in the club and buy a $500 Henny bottle or a Casamigo bottle. When I can buy the damn thing down the street for $60 and we can pregame all the way there and still have an incredible time, right? So I'm very intentional about, hey, this is the reason behind what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, and this is what I value and this is what it means to me. And so sometimes giving them that context helps them understand and it helps them just kind of soften the blow or receive it in a more objective and constructive way where it's really, and then sometimes they start asking questions too, right? Or it sparks something in your brain. Cause let's say I'm like, okay, well, I want to have kids someday. So I'm going to start saving, something like that. Right. Or I want to spend more time with kids eventually when I have them. So I'm going to pay off my debt. And so I'll have more flexibility to do that. And then sometimes, you know, they're like, yo, that's fire. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that's dope. And they start thinking like, yeah, I need to be doing that too. You know, and so sometimes you have those interactions. It's always difficult given the subject matter, but I'm just always honest and real. And I give them context because I don't want it to come off like, oh, I'm better than you, or I don't care about our friendship. I don't care about making memories together and stuff like that. Right. So and always it's important to give context. I know it's hard to talk about these things and you don't have to, you know, you don't owe nobody an explanation, like many people tend to say. But when it comes to friends and family, sometimes, you know, give them that context because they do love you.
That's such an important point, Bafi. And I think that's where some people get it confused, where like once they enter this new arena of like improving their financial situation, they might start to feel like they're better than everybody else who isn't quite there yet. Like maybe they're still making bad financial decisions and they're just not even aware of it. Like this financial development, this skill, like everybody starts it in different parts of their life. Different things motivate people to actually improve their finances. And for some people, they might not be there yet. And for others, they might be there. But one thing that I've seen people kind of take the wrong way is where they start to kind of get on this, you know, I'm on a pedestal, if you will, like I'm trying to improve my finances. You guys are all broke. And that people we're all human, right? It's like people understand that they can feel that delivery, like the way you kind of say
energy.
It.
Yeah.
And so I think body language too. Exactly. Bafi, the way you like explained it all, like I think that's very important because providing the context, like why you're doing something, it's going to show that you're doing it out of love, right? You're not trying to say you're better than everybody. You're just doing something that's going to benefit your future. Like that's what you want to focus on. And if anything, to Bafi's point, I think it's going to inspire people. Like it's going to inspire people in your circle to be like, wait a minute, like that actually makes sense. Like maybe I should kind of start making some better decisions in order to kind of improve my future. Like this, you know, when somebody sees Bafi, like he's not coming at it from the angle of like, I'm better than you. He's coming at it from like, I'm just trying to improve my financial future. Like, you know, we're still human. Like, I'm not going to like sit here and like harp on you or just get mad at you. Like people are going to respect that. They're going to feel that energy. And I would say that's pretty much how I've kind of reflecting on my past when I was starting to improve my future. Like I was around a lot of people who just weren't quite there yet. And one of the things I commonly said was just like, you know, hey, I just don't have the extra money right now. Like that was it. Like that statement, like it's very like, you know, civil. Like I was like, I would like to go on like a cruise with you, or I'd like to go on a vacation with you, but I genuinely don't have the extra money right now because I'm focused on allocating it in different areas of my life. And most people kind of like, they were receptive to it, right? Like they didn't see me as like sitting here and be like, no, I don't go on those vacations because I'm trying to become a millionaire, right? There's ways you can deliver it where you're trying to just help them understand what you're doing in a sense. And it's kind of like an art. So I think ultimately just having that context or just coming at it from the angle of, you know, I'm trying to improve my future. Like a lot of people are going to respect that. And ultimately I think society has started to kind of open up to that, where if you're just like honest about what you're doing, you know, like I want to, like, if you want to buy a home, or maybe you want to save up to build your own business, or maybe you're about to have a kid, right? If you tell people like, hey, I'm planning for a future, like 5 to 10 years down the road, like most people are going to be respected of that. And if they're not, then you should ask the question of like, why are these people in my circle to begin with, if they're not supporting my goals and like me as like my development as a human. So great points there, Bafi.
Yeah, man. And lastly, like one thing I'll touch on that with it is even when it comes to just weddings, right? That is an area that is very, very challenging for a lot of families. And the reality is majority of people don't have the money to put up that average cost of a wedding of $30,000 to $50,000. Right. And so there's a whole lot of pressure on the couple and pressure from family, pressure from society, or what they deem is worthy of, you know, the beginning stage of that next chapter. And so it's really important that if you are at a stage where you're thinking about marriage, you're thinking about family planning, kids and so forth, and you're starting to see and feel what is going to require financially, time commitment, energy, and you want to be like, hey, look. Yes, and a huge celebration might be great, but what is even better is maybe I save up and have a house for my family. Maybe I save up and make sure that I can spend some quality time with my family and then focus on that next chapter that way, by having maybe a micro wedding or some kind of a medium-sized wedding, and you communicate that to family, and if they don't respect it, that's on them. That's not on you. Don't feel like you let somebody down because you did not provide a wedding celebration that they wanted or expected, right? Because at the end of the day, the most important thing there is really the well-being of that union, is really the well-being of that family, and what is to come, you know, following that celebration. You don't want that celebration to end up being a burden. And then statistics show that the bigger the wedding, the shorter the marriage, actually, which is really sad. And so, you know, maybe the best thing to do is actually not even spend no damn money on the thing. If you have it and that's what your dream is, then go for it, right? No problem there. But yeah, overall, I'd say just also it takes one person to show some vulnerability along with some honesty for others to open up to you as well, right? And so it's like nobody wants to be the first one to take the risk to open up to try something different because it doesn't come naturally, or maybe they feel like their friends will look at them funny or their family will look at them funny. And that's okay. I've been that one person. I've been that black sheep on so many levels throughout the chapters of my life. And as long as you know you're making the decisions for the right reasons and it's noble reasons, and it's really about the bigger picture that you value the most, then continue making that. Over time, your family will get on board. I can promise you that. They're going to see, okay, you're happier. You're doing great things. You have a younger energy about you. You're more excited about life. You're healthier. They will start coming to you, like Josh said, it inspires people too. They will start asking you questions. They might come to you for assistance. They might say, you know, maybe, you know, your uncle might not come to you for assistance or help, but your uncle might have a daughter or a son, right? And they're like, hey, can you teach my son what you, you know, how to kind of manage their money well? All these things, you'd be surprised just by being honest and transparent. Yes, you're not going to be received everywhere. But that's just life. If you're received everywhere, then you're in the wrong place, honestly.
Well said, man. Well said. Yeah. And ultimately, you know, I've also been there just like Boffy, where my family, like we didn't really come from money. Like there was, to me, like I had to learn everything myself. I had to go through and just self-educate, had to learn how the stock market worked, had to learn how to budget. I kind of grew up in a household where money came in, money went out, wasn't really much of a concept of saving or even investing. To this day, you know, there's still kind of a struggle with that in my own parents', you know, lifestyle and whatnot. But I will say, like, once you start to go through this journey, like I got a lot of pushback or pullback from people like, oh, why don't you just enjoy life? Like, why are you trying to care so much about money? And the point that I had to get to is just, I had to understand that they just don't see this journey through my lens, right? Like they're seeing it through their lens. And you can't really get mad at them because that's not going to do any good. You just have to realize that they're just not quite there when it comes to the financial skill set, right? Like you're building a skill set of this game of money that impacts us all. So like some people choose to just ignore it. Some people choose to learn about it. Some people choose to learn a little bit about it, like through experience, but not really care about it, right? So like everybody makes a decision, whether we're aware of it or not, about whether they learn about money or not. So if you choose to go on this journey, this path of improving your financial situation, of saving money, of maybe it doesn't come natural to you or your family or where you're from, like you do have to realize that people around you, you are going to seem kind of more of like that black sheep of like who just does things differently. And I think you just have to like warm up to that and be okay with the pushback and just realize that the people who may be saying things to you like, oh, just enjoy life or just do this or whatever, they just don't understand right now, you know? And ultimately I would say, use that as a motivation, like a motivator to inspire you to continue on this journey. Because once you get to the point where you're able to enjoy your life a lot more and you can go on those vacations and your family finds out you're not going in debt or that you have $100,000 in the bank, they're going to start to be like, wait a minute. Like, tell me about this investing stuff or this saving stuff, right? You're going to start to become the beacon of inspiration and of what's possible. Like they might have kind of gave you some pushback in the early stages because they didn't understand. But once they see the results, you're going to be like a beacon of inspiration, right? So like if anything, just tell them, all right, you know, thank you. You know, that's your opinion. If you think I should be enjoying life, whatever, I have my vision. I'm going to focus on this. Like I respect your opinion. Let's talk again in a couple of years and see where things are at. You know, then you can be that beacon of inspiration once they see that your life is becoming more stable. Once they see that there's another route, once they see that there's another option, like I would just keep that in mind as you're going through this journey. Expect the pushback, expect people in your circle to not understand. And even if you try to help them understand, if they're not ready, they're not going to be receptive to what you're saying, right? Like all the information to improve your finances is on Google and YouTube for free. You can find everything you need to improve your finances, to budget, to invest in the stock market. It's all on the computer that you have access to it right now. So like everybody has access to it. But most people just aren't ready for it yet. They're just not at the point of their life where they think of it as important, right? So like you can't teach the desire to learn this stuff. That has to come from somebody else. Like that has to come from internal, right? So just keep that in mind as you go through this journey. You know, the only thing you can truly control is your own life path. You can only control what you control. So focus on that. Respect that other people have different perspectives. They might not see eye to eye to you. It is what it is, right? You just keep moving forward. Stay focused on your dream. Don't let other people tear you off your path, because everybody's going to try, right? So you just got to kind of, you know, spend a couple of years, block out all the noise, stay focused on what you're trying to accomplish in life. Maybe that's building up your savings, building more financial stability in your own life. Let that be your North Star, if you will. Keep following that and block out all the noise. And just remind yourself that you'll be that inspiration for when other people in your circle are ready to make that journey themselves.
Very well said, man. I mean, I don't know if I can really top that. One of the biggest things that I've had to struggle with when it comes to dealing with people and personal in my life is that I grew up with like a lot of friends. I grew up in South Orange County in, you know, California. So it's prominently a wealthy area. And so most people around here, oh, you know, they always talk about money, right? Money's a big talk around here. It's like, oh, it's like, you know, my dad got this new car. My parents bought this new vacation home, this and that. And so these kids naturally, I would say probably naturally, grow up with the mindset of saying like, oh, cool. Like I cannot wait till I make some money. And so I grew up with a lot of people like that. And they'd always talk about, oh, when I make money, when I make money, when I make money. And so kind of dawned on me when I was probably about 18, just, you know, I just got out of high school and I was surrounded by this friend group. They were talking about business. And yeah, once we start our business, and I go, okay, so what's the business plan? What is the business? They're like, well, it's a business, dude. And I'm like, yeah, but what plans do you have in step to get to the point to where you can actually make some money? And they're like, well, that's further down the line. And I'm like, no, that's not. You don't start an LLC first and then come up with a plan, dude. Like you start a plan, you have a plan, and then you start the LLC. And so for me, it was surrounding myself with people who actually have executional skills. And so like a former person we had on the podcast, Sim, I try to surround myself with people who are older than me. And so with age comes wisdom. And so I try to, you know, surround myself with people who actually have executed on these things that they've talked about over time. And so one of the biggest things is saying like, oh, hey, I would like to plan for this vacation. Sim and I were talking about how he's going to go to Dubai. 2 weeks later, homie was like, yeah, I bought a ticket. I'm like, okay. And so being able to execute on these things is one of the biggest things for me. You can have dreams, you can have plans and aspirations, but what do you have? Like, what are you going to execute on? Like, you need to have a step-by-step thing. And, you know, maybe it's like, oh, I'm going to start investing. And it's like, oh, well, I'll invest when I make 500 grand a year. It's like, no, do you need to invest when you make 500 bucks a month? Because it's these little steps that get you to the point to where you'll be able to have these big steps and these big goals. You need to start with the little goals to get to the big goals. And so for me, it's surrounding yourself with people who you want to be like. And so such as this podcast, I try to surround myself with people who are more intelligent about the topics than me, like Josh and Boffy. And I'm sitting back and I'm learning and I'm chiming in every once in a while. But, you know, for me, it's like a learning lesson. And I think that's the whole thing about life is that everybody has a point to where they can give something that everyone could resonate with. You know, my dad has a saying, if you can't give your money, give your knowledge. And if you can't give your knowledge, give your time. And so it's these little things about life that you can say, okay, it's not necessarily money related, but it's mindset related on how you're going to get to the goal further on.
Love it.
Yeah, well said, man. And Pierce, yeah, thank you so much for like sharing that perspective. That's very interesting perspective, ultimately. My question for you, just like a quick follow-up question, would you say that people, like, first of all, like, I think what Pierce just explained shows like, the environment you're in is like super important, because if you're in fake environments or environments where people just aren't real with like what they want, like that's going to distract you in your own journey. Like imagine if you were sitting at that table with people wanting to start a business where like they're talking the talk, but when it came to action, like they're just, when Pierce was starting to try to figure out what's going on behind the scenes, there wasn't much there. But like, if you got caught up in the talk, you could have just been hanging out with them for like 6 months to a year. And, you know, you're talking about the business and, you know, you're enjoying the nights out, like trying to hype it all up. But if nothing ever happens, it's all just kind of a house of cards. It's done from the beginning. So yeah, that's an interesting point. And I guess my follow-up question is more so of just like that environment of growing up. Would you say you've noticed a correlation or just like a point of where when people, like, especially in Southern California, like a lot of families come from money. Like a lot of the kids, I'm sure in your high school, like had a lot of, like their parents were probably extremely well off.
And trust.
Yeah, exactly. So like, I'm sure maybe you've seen instances where like the kids just felt like they didn't need to do anything because life was set for them. So they just, you know, fucked around. So like, I'm curious, like if that was like super common and if you saw like more of the negative impacts of like having lots of money for a kid. Cause like, that's something we don't really talk about. Like a lot of people are like, oh yeah, it's a trust fund kid, you know, whatever. But it's just like that also introduces a whole other portion of problems, such as just like not having, you know, you kind of have your own problems of like how do you decide what you want to do in life, or people start to build like this like a lot of flexing, you know, I guess if you will. So like, is that something you've noticed a lot?
Oh dude, it's so prominent here. The one thing, like, you know, I'm very blessed when it comes to my family situation. And so the one thing that I extremely appreciate till this day is my dad made me get a minimum wage job, right? Doesn't matter how much money or how, you know, how big of the house we live in, what cars we have, whatever this, you know, whatever. Okay, like I, you know, oh, hey, you'll be good. My dad made me get a job. And I was so against it. I was like, dude, I don't need a job. I'm good. But till this day, I mean, I've been working there for 4 years, coming up on April 8th, actually, at the same place. And yeah, it pays minimum wage, but I'm sitting there and I'm like, dude, it's not the money that I've made that I like while I've been there. It's the habits that have been instilled to me of doing, like, you know, it's a Mike Tyson quote. It's like doing something you hate, but doing it like you love it. And so it doesn't matter how well off you could be in the sense of right now. Money comes and goes, dude. There's ebbs and flows in this thing, especially if you have family and business. You'll have good years and you'll have bad years. You'll have years that, you know, you could clear $1 million, $2 million. And you have years that you're like, dude, we made like $3,000 this month. And so once you start rationalizing these things of that, okay, how can I set up these good years and these bad years to plan my future? It really starts making you think like, a lot of my friends, we're all into cars. I'm a big car guy, right? And so the new cars are coming out. My friends are like, dude, new Lambo came out. It's like $300,000. It's not a lot of money. And I'm sitting there like, because these kids have never had to work for money, right? They throw daddy's platinum Amex down. No big deal. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, bro, like I cannot believe this is acting. But the thing is they don't see the point of view that we see, right? They see the point of view as, oh, dude, it's always going to be there. To which, yeah, it very well may always be there. If you have a good, you know, if your family set it up good and you have a trust or whatever, however you guys have it set up, it may always be there. But it's the habits and things that you get instilled. No matter how much money you have, you should always try to start and like, how does this work thing like happen? Like, I'm very blessed that my dad also, you know, didn't give me a whole bunch of money growing up, like, you know, throughout high school and everything like that, throughout even right now, dude. I'm very blessed. My dad pays for my house. You know, he pays the electricity, he pays the bills, but my biggest responsibility is what I want to do. So all the money that I make in my life, I get to allocate towards the fun stuff in life. Mm-hmm. But my dad's also teaching me about the responsibility of owning a home, because that's something that I plan on doing further on. Unlike my friends who, you know, my dad bought me this new house in Newport Beach. And I'm like, cool, dude. Like, yeah, dude, it's like $7,000 a month. It's not like too bad. And I'm like, that is an awful lot of money, my guy. Like, you have no idea how to rationalize these things. So it's, you can hang around these people who have these, you know, absurd amounts of wealth. There's no big deal about that. But also surround yourself with people who have actual real world knowledge and real, like, rational thinking skills when it comes to this stuff. Because that's not real life for 99.999% of people. You have to work for your money.
That powerful, man. Well said, Pierce. And thank you for sharing all of that. I think it really kind of highlights more of, and I'm sure we have a lot of listeners on this podcast, maybe parents or people who are just in the early stages, maybe they're in their 20s or 30s, who maybe they have the ambition of building the generational wealth, right? Where they want to set up their family and their family's family, or their, you know, 4 or 5 generations, you know, like people have these ambitious plans. And this is an important conversation because ultimately something a lot of people don't realize is a lot of these very wealthy families, like even like billionaire families, like extremely wealthy families, like a lot of them struggle to hang on to the wealth after a couple generations. One of the stats I read recently was 70% of wealthy families lose their wealth by the second generation. So it's very easy to pass down the money or pass some money down to generations. But what's very difficult, I'll go for it.
And sorry to interrupt, but one of the biggest things that I see, especially coming around from kids who do have absurd amounts of wealth, is the reason that this money's not passed down is because the habits aren't passed down, right?
Exactly. So it's
the big thing. I'm sorry if that's what you were going to say.
No, perfectly said.
It's the big thing that these habits aren't passed down. How do you save money? How do you invest money? How do you make this money last for generations down the line? Because if you have, you know, $100 million in the bank, and you're like, oh, dude, I'll blow up by the time I'm dead. Like, dude, that is generational wealth at its finest, dude. Like, your kids will never have to worry about money. But the thing is, you have to make them worry about money, no matter how much money you come from. Because if it's always going to be there and they don't understand how it works, then it's just going to go here and there, new Ferrari, new Rolex. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, sorry, you got to pass down the important point is not only passing down the money, but passing down the financial education, the financial lessons, right? If you're just giving money for money's sake, if somebody hasn't learned the money management skills, they're just going to piss all the money away, right? And Pierce has been a testament to seeing that in his own life, like in Southern California, where there's a lot of these situations where people have lots of money, right? Maybe they're in these families with multiple millions of dollars or even billions. Once the kids get that money, if they're not passing down these money management skills or even just the traits that take that are needed to manage this money, that money is only going to last so long. It's over.
They're burning cash like these venture capital companies burn cash, and
that's
companies that just go public burn cash like nobody's business, right? And Josh, to your point, like you said, 70% lose the wealth by the second generation. It actually gets worse when it gets to the third generation. Is 90% of them lose it by third generation, right? Ooh. So the generational wealth is not the money that's being passed down. It's everything that Pierce and Josh just highlighted. That's really where the wealth really resides.
Yeah.
Well said, man. This podcast has absolutely flown by. Like, let me tell you, this was a fun one. And I think we covered quite a bit. We're a little over the hour mark, which is great. But I guess, we kind of want to wrap things up. We don't want to keep people here too long, even though it's a great discussion. It was a lot of fun. But we'll start with Bafi. Like, Bafi, do you have any closing thoughts for the audience or just any summaries or any key insights from this podcast?
No, for sure. I mean, I know there's a lot of misconceptions. We touched on a few. There's still many that we didn't touch on. But as you can see, with each one of them, you can have a full episode on every single misconception, right? And so the one I'll leave everybody with today is do not wait to invest, right? One of the biggest misconceptions is people like to tell themselves that I will invest when I have more money. I will invest later because I have years and I have time. No, you don't. I don't care who you think you is. You don't have time. You don't know when time runs out. You have not bought time, right? And so it's only borrowed and it's a gift, and you have to treat each day and value each day fully. And by doing that, it doesn't mean you take each day and just consume every single thing, right? Because as much as you take, you should be given just as much, not just for yourself, but also for the future generations and others. So don't wait till invest. Begin investing today. I don't care if it's a dollar. I don't care if it's 10, if it's 100. Start as you are and then continue building from there. If you wait and think you're going to invest tomorrow, I can promise you, you're not going to invest tomorrow, because tomorrow becomes today, and tomorrow becomes today, and tomorrow continues to become today. And you'll wake up one day at 60, 55, 45. 45 is too early, but you don't want to wake up one day at 60 realizing that you did not put a single penny aside. You have to work just as hard as the younger people that you now have to compete with. And by then, we're not even competing with humans no more, too. Don't forget that. This AI is kicking my ass already, right? And so you want to have a natural hedge in life. And one of the best hedges you can have is to make sure your money works. Therefore, if and when the day do come by where you're unable to work for whatever the reason may be under the sun, you can still have at least your basic needs met, and you can enjoy the rest of your time here, whatever remaining time that has been given to you. So start now. Invest today if you haven't.
Wow. I couldn't agree more. And funny enough, about 8 months ago, I started a side portfolio just to kind of test this out I wanted to show a friend like how powerful small contributions are, or just smaller contributions. So I went ahead and started a portfolio of just doing $100 a week. Like, I know to some people that is a lot, but even if you're just doing $50 a week or $25 a week, like, investing anything is always better than investing nothing. That being said, about 8 months ago, I started a portfolio of just $100 a week, and it's already over $5,000. So like, I know like that's, you know, to wow. somebody who's not understanding just how powerful small contributions are, like this stuff adds up, right? Not just 8 months. Like the more time goes by, compound interest just continues to really amplify these gains, right? So it's $8,000 in 8 months. Maybe I'll give a heads up, or we'll do like a highlight to this, you know, 8 more months down the road. You'll just start to see that compound effect at work, right? These small contributions do add up. So start where you are, like Bafi mentioned. Even if it's a small amount, if it's $20 a week, anything is better than nothing. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And another key point to remember is you'll never be this young again to invest at such an advantage in your life. It's like, well, however old you are right now, if you're 20, if you're 18, if you're 30, if you're 42, if you're 50, whatever, however old you are, you're currently at the youngest point of your life, like in reality. So like, use the time you have left throughout this life to your advantage by investing in assets that are going to make you richer as time goes on. Because hopefully throughout these podcasts, you realize that the biggest advantage in the stock market, the best strategy, the best thing you can get to work in your favor is compound interest. And compound interest only really works with time. The more time that you have on your side, the more compound interest, the power of compound interest is really going to start to amplify and grow your portfolio. So great, great points. And Pierce, yeah, any closing thoughts on your ends?
No, I mean, just one. I want people to be able to, you know, if you have friends with toxic habits, like going out to eat and stuff like that, like Josh and Boffy, you know, were saying, don't feel scared to say no when it comes to stuff like that. Cause you have to prioritize your future self rather than like for you now. Like, you know, for me, it's always the big thing. It's like, oh, cool, we're going to go to this nice steak dinner. It's going to cost $200. It's like, okay, what's going to mean more to me? A steak dinner that I'm probably not going to remember, you know, 10 years down the line, or $200 invested compounding over that time.
And you're going to shit in 2 days anyway.
Yeah, serious, bro. It's gone. It's straight up. And so it's like, for, you know, just try to prioritize the things that are truly meaningful in your life, not just, you know, situational.
Well said, man. Well, everybody, this wraps up episode 17. This was a lot of fun. And kind of Bafi talked on it a little bit. There's so many more misconceptions. Like, we probably like really tackled like two or three of them. There's probably like 10 or 15 of them that are like the core ones. And then those break down even more. So I think we're probably going to have to do another episode on this subject. I think we really covered it well. And the time just flew by so quickly, which means it was a lot of fun. So again, right. Bafi and Pierce, thank you as always for coming back on and being a co-host for this episode 17. Yeah, we'll definitely have to schedule another episode, just tackling more misconceptions. Maybe we can do just like one topic at a time. That way we can really focus in on that.
Right. Great idea. I agree.
Cool. Cool. That being said, this is a wrap. Thank you everybody for once again, listening to another episode. If you haven't already, we have 16 other episodes. So this is the first one you're listening to. Don't forget to go listen to all those other ones, because we have over, I want to say it's like over 14 or 15 hours of free financial education out there. That's going to help you gain a better understanding of how this world works. So use those resources. They're completely free. And we'll see you again in the next episode. Bye-bye. If you feel just like I do, link up, come and join this crew. Hey, I'ma go invest and I'ma watch my money double, take it to another level with that market hustle. Always play it smart. You ain't dealing with a sucker. Take it to another level with that market hustle. I'ma hustle, hustle 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 with that market hustle. Go.